Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Radio Theater Channel's weekly download. I'm Jim Dolan. Today we're going to venture into the later radio, that's the newer radio. The first program we're going to hear is from Theater 5. This is a show that was on ABC Radio, I believe, in 1965. And the show is called Discotheque.
What is this place? Where am I?
Turn it on, man. Keep dancing.
How did I get here? How?
Keep dancing, man.
What am I doing here?
Keep dancing, man. Keep dancing.
Theater 5 presents Discotheque.
Jenny, it's no use, Jenny. I know you're here somewhere. Jenny! I beg your pardon, sir. I'm trying to find my wife. I know she ran this way, and I... No, wait. Say, wait a minute. What all the nerve. Just ignored me and walked away. All the blazes with him. I've got to find her. Got to find my wife. Excuse me, madam. Could you help me? I'm looking for a woman. Well, she looks more like a girl. My wife. You see, I'm sure you remember her if you saw her. She... Oh, please don't turn away like that. Look, here's my card. My name is Ralph Wilson. I'm an investment counselor, a respected man in my... Oh, please, listen to me. Oh, what's the matter with all of you? Where am I? What city is this anyway? I'm so confused. Jenny! Jenny! I insist that you answer me! Jenny! 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 I've got to slow down. I'm exhausted. If only I could find a cab or something. No cabs, no cars at all. Where am I? I don't recognize anything. Row after row of tall buildings, as far as your eye can see. All the windows, dark and lightless. And these filthy, littered streets, completely empty. Oh, there's a little park over there. I'll sit down just for a second. I must sit down. Oh, that's better. That's better. What a dreary-looking park. Grass dead. No flowers. Junk and trash all over the place. Ugly, ugly city.
Hey.
Oh.
You got a match, man?
What?
Like a match, sweetie. You dig?
Young lady, who are you?
Shh. Cool it, man. They may be watching.
What are you talking about?
Cool it. You want some official to dig us making this scene together? Man, there's rules here.
Well, what rules? Where am I? What city is this?
Oh, man. Like, I gotta split this place.
Oh, you come back here. I insist.
Don't you touch me.
Shh. Ow.
Watch the contact.
My hand. It's burned.
Square.
What happened? I only touched you and...
Oh, man. You don't dig, do you?
Dig?
No contact. No communication. Like the rules.
What rules? Who makes them?
Oh, man, like you don't make this scene regular, do you?
Well, I'm a stranger around here, if that's what you mean.
A stranger. This cat's found herself a stranger. Like right off the boat from Nowheresville.
I don't understand.
Like you're my ticket, Tiger. You're my one-way ticket. Like out of this scene. Like a chick finds herself a square that don't belong, she can maybe cut out. Split.
What?
Escape. You dig?
Well, young lady, you've got the wrong ideas about me.
Like I got a lot of ideas. My name's Wilma.
No, you don't understand. You see, I'm looking for my wife. Perhaps you saw her. She's a beautiful girl with long golden hair. She's a good deal younger than I am. I'm sure you remember her. She's a dancer. Well, what I mean to say, she always wanted to dance. You see, when she married me, I insisted that she forget all of... Well, that's not important. What happened was that we had difficulties. You see, she ran away, but I found her, and I was bringing her back when... Well, I don't know. Suddenly, there was a terrible, terrible confusion. And she ran away from me again. I tried to follow, but somehow I lost her. However, I'm certain she's here someplace.
Hey, Tiger. You, like, forget that blonde chick. You got little old Wilma cat now. Man, it's getting dark. We could, like, split this scene so easy.
Get away from me.
Cool it.
I want nothing to do with you, do you understand?
Like anything you say. You're blowing solo on this set, man. Only
what?
Like I just might know what scene a certain chick with long golden hair is making.
Ginny, you know where Ginny is? Now tell me.
This cat don't sing for free.
All right, what do you want?
Like when you take this chick back. You take me, too.
Take... Well, that's impossible.
Like no deal? So long, swinger.
No, wait, come back. All right, it's a deal. I'll take you back with me. Now, where is she?
Dancing.
What?
Dancing. Over at Nick's place.
Nick's place?
Yeah, where the action is. Chicks like this Ginny always make it at Nick's.
Who's Nick?
He's the man, Tiger. And the man sits up on the platform and he spins the records. And that beat just goes on and on.
Beat?
And Nick's got himself a discotheque now, man. A swinging discotheque.
Discotheque? One of those crowded jet-set dance halls? I never go to such places.
You want to locate your chick? You're going to make that scene.
Oh, very well. Take me there. But I insist that you be quick about it.
Like, wow. Come on. You follow behind me like you didn't know me, but had ideas.
What?
Nobody communicates around here. But like, we all got ideas. Like that's the lead sheet. Like that's the whole point. You dig?
What kind of a place is this? That music, it's enough to blast out your eardrums. And the heat. And smoke. Where's Ginny?
She'll show. Come on, Tiger. Turn it on. You're supposed to dance here. It's the rule.
Dance? You call that dancing? Everybody writhing their bodies about like tortured animals groping through a fog of heat and smoke. Moving alone as if each were in his own little agonized world. Why, it's indecent. And do they have to play the record so loud? Music blocks out everything. Thought, emotions, memory, everything.
Why, man, this is like where the action is.
Who's that fellow playing the records over there? I swear I've met him someplace.
Like that's Nick himself.
Perhaps he could help me. Excuse me, sir.
You mean me, Clyde?
You know, I believe we've met someplace.
Like I'm Nick, Clyde. Like everybody knows Nick.
My name's Ralph. Ralph Wilson. You see, say, could you turn down the music a bit?
Clyde, you just don't dig.
I beg your pardon?
Like, welcome to Nick's discotheque, Clyde. Like it's the in-type scene to make down these parts.
These parts? Where are we?
Clyde? find out for yourself. Dig?
Does this continue?
It just goes on, man. On and on.
Oh, this searing heat. And the smoke. Hideous. Cacophonous music. It's appalling.
Yeah? That's why you and me gonna split this scene. Gonna split for good. Come on, Tiger. Take me away from here. Old Nick ain't looking now. Take me back for good.
No. Until I find my wife. I've got to find Ginny.
Like, suppose your chick don't want to go back, man. What's the action then?
I'd want to go back. Why, I force her.
Like, wow. Tiger man strikes again.
You see, I do not tolerate disobedience. Ginny is a very weak-willed person. I've always had to make decisions for her. Why, she even tried to call off our wedding at the last minute. But I was firm.
Like, wow.
You see, my mother had planned a beautiful ceremony and reception for us. Ginny's parents are dead.
Man, like you got a mother-type character making the scene, huh?
My mother is a very fine woman. She's widowed. She lives with us. I don't know what I'd do without her.
Like, that's why this Ginny chick cut out on you, huh?
Of course not. Ginny's a child. A selfish, immature, beautiful child woman who needs to be guided, controlled. I've had to push her into everything. Everything. Why, even buying a permanent home, can you imagine she wanted the two of us to live alone in expensive hotel rooms like a couple of gypsies? Oh, yes, romantic nonsense. Why, she didn't even want to have a child.
Man, this chick, like she's got a kid?
We have a son, Robbie. He's 3 years old.
Man, like a chick's got to be pretty low to put out on her own kid. No wonder she's making this scene.
Well, what's being here got to do with that?
Like everything, man. Turn it on. Keep dancing. This Ginny chick. She ran off with some other cat?
No, nothing like that.
Like, I'm sorry I asked.
Well, yes. Yes, there were other men. Old. The disgrace, I terrible disgrace. Everybody knew, my friends, my poor mother.
Let Ginny go, man. Let that sad little chick go.
No, I know what's right for her. For us, no one else can have her. She's mine. I'll make her come with me if I have to force her, if I have to beat her. What's the matter? Why are you staring at me like that?
Just wondering, man, why you ain't here yourself. Permanent.
What?
Oh, turn it on, man. Keep dancing.
Where is she?
She'll show.
Oh, I was so close to finding her. So close to having her for good. And then something happened. If only I could remember. I was so close. Only 3 hours and 15 minutes away. I remember saying that.
Huh?
I remember. Wait a minute. That's it. 3 hours and 15 minutes. That was the time it was going to take for our journey home. Yes. Yes. Now I remember. It was a sunny, beautiful day. And the ground swept away from us as we soared upward. And then it clouded over, but the plane finally broke through the heavy overcast, and we were landing.
Turn it on, man. Turn it on. Keep dancing.
And then, yes, it's all coming back. Suddenly the plane dropped as if it were pulled down by some evil giant. I remember thinking that. And there was a horrendous noise. Oh, no. Screams, the people, the flames. And I called her name. Ginny. Ginny.
Turn it on, man. Turn it on. Keep dancing.
And then I saw her in the flames, and she laughed at me and started running, and I followed her. Jenny. Oh, no.
Like now you're starting to dig, man.
He's dead. You're all. And this place that I followed her to, this is... Ah!
Something bugging you, Clyde?
Nick?
Yeah. You got the message, Clyde.
Jenny, where are you, Jenny?
Is that the chick you're trying to find? Over there?
Where?
Like over there, Clyde. Way over where I'm pointing. See through the heat and the smoke? You see? Dancing all alone? Like she's making it solo?
Jenny! Jenny, I've got to get you out of here. Jenny, speak to me.
Do I know you, mister?
Jenny, stop dancing like that, I insist. You're my wife, and I'll not have you making those vulgar gyrations.
I never saw you before, mister.
That dance, that indecent, obscene, lonely dance. Stop it!
I can't, mister. Please, go away.
You better stop bugging this chick, Clyde. This chick ain't having nothing but the big beat.
I can't believe it.
That's the way it is, Clyde. That's the way it is.
I see. And this is what it all comes down to, eh? A sweltering discotheque. And a dance that never ends.
That's the way it is, Clyde. Like old Nick. It never runs out of records.
It never ends. Not for all eternity. The beat keeps going. And the body has continued to move, writhing, grasping, and all the time desiring, but there's no contact. That's the punishment, isn't it? No human contact.
Like, if you never made it back there, Clyde, you don't expect to make it here.
Well, I'm getting out.
Oh, you want to split, Clyde? So split. You'll be back sooner or later.
No, never. I'm getting out of here, and I'm never coming back. Jenny, take my hand.
Clyde, like the chick stays.
I'm taking her with me.
Like the chick stays.
Get out of my way. I've got my hands on you now, Jenny. You're mine.
Ah! My hands. My arms. They're on fire. I'm burning.
Like the chick stays.
Oh.
No, I won't release her. She's mine.
Burning.
Like the chick stays.
Burning.
Burning.
Oh, he's in pain, Doctor. My poor darling son is in pain.
Mrs. Wilson, please. We're doing all we can to make him comfortable. He's delirious. The poor man thinks he's in hell or something.
Burning.
He's still feeling the flames from the crash. Well, the important thing is that we've pulled him through. He'll live.
Live? But what kind of a life will it be, so terribly scarred and burned? Oh, if only he didn't try to go back for her.
Mrs. Wilson, she was his wife.
She was a hussy, a no-good hussy who obsessed my darling boy. Well, she got what was coming to her. Was there any chance of saving her?
No. She died instantly.
Burning.
There, my darling.
Burning.
You still have your mother. I'll always look after you.
No, I think we'd better leave him. I'll let you know the minute he regains consciousness. Oh, Miss Barrows. He's still delirious, but there should be no further trouble through the night. I want you to stay close to him.
Yes, sir.
This way, Mrs. Wilson.
Cool it, Tiger. Listen to Nursie and cool it.
You go away. Go away.
Oh, no. You ain't never gonna shake me, swinger. So you better cool it while you still can. Because someday you're gonna make that discotheque scene again. And old Nick, he's got lots of records all lined up for you. You dig?
Has presented Discotheque, written by Romeo Muller, produced and directed by Warren Somerville. In the cast, George Petrie, Evelyn Juster, Larry Haynes, Constance Parker, Ethel Rennie, and Jeff David. Audio engineer Marty Folia. Sound technician Ed Blaney. Script editor Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastotsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Ted Bell. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
That's an episode of Theater 5 and Discotheque from 1965. Now we're going to zip on up a little bit for the Zero Hour from 1974. This is called The Extortionist.
I'm Rod Serling. You're listening to The Zero Hour. Rest your eyes. Exercise your imagination. Today, Glenn Hall Taylor's tale of a threatened death. The Extortionist. Starring Mel Torme. In a Mutual Broadcasting System presentation of The Zero Hour.
Brought to you by the makers of General Motors Parts, by the State Farm Insurance Company, by Dial Soap, and by the makers of Contact on Mutual Radio.
They just don't realize how little a renter's policy cost and how much it will do for them.
State Farm agent Ed Axel of Fairmont, Minnesota.
And it's hard for people to realize just how much personal property they do have. They forget about the drawers full of different things. So we tell them how they can protect the property that they already have. If they do have a fire or a theft, we will be there to take care of them so that you don't have to start over again. They're just shocked to find out that the rates are so low and the amount of coverage that we can give them for that low rate.
State Farm Fire and Casualty offers renter's insurance that can protect just about all your personal property for very little cost. A good reason to see your nearby State Farm agent now.
And like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
slate-roofed mansion of the Trenton family stands lonely and cold behind a wall of rough-hewn stone. In it, bedridden and ill-tempered, Catherine Trenton, the last of her generation, lives with her servants, her secretary, her niece, and her nurse, ruling their lives in martinet fashion, her baton of authority, the silver-headed cane with which she summons them to serve her.
Charlotte! Charlotte! That idiot nurse. Charlotte!
Good morning, Mrs. Trenton.
You know I breakfast at 9 sharp. Will you look at the time? It's 7 after. I suppose you stopped to poison the orange juice. You can't wait to get your greedy fingers on the money waiting for you in my will.
I don't expect you to will me anything, Mrs. Trenton.
And you know I'm leaving you money, all of you. Not because you deserve it, but because after I die, I don't want my private affairs dragged through the courts by a flock of vultures.
Shall I pour your tea?
Don't you always? You're a nurse. You probably know some poisons that couldn't be detected in a cup of tea.
I'm sure there are several.
Oh, stop the damn rapping and come in. And you, Charlotte, can stop glaring at me like that.
Good morning, Mrs. Trenton. Morning, Charlotte.
Good morning, Mr. Franklin. Will you hold the door open for me, please? I'm leaving.
There you are. The postman left these, Mrs. Trenton.
Well, never mind the mail. Jason, how long have you been my secretary?
Almost 10 years.
I'll bet you've skimmed off a goodly portion of my money during that time.
If you really believe that, why don't you go to the police? But why don't you?
Don't press me too hard, Jason. Well, you may go now. We'll discuss the mail later.
That's fine with me. However, this one letter, I haven't opened it. It's marked confidential.
But you're my confidential secretary. Open it.
Very well. It's just that I hadn't wanted to without your permission.
Well?
It's a demand for money. An extortion letter. They threaten to kill you if you don't pay them $30,000 by noon tomorrow.
Pay who $30,000? Who's going to kill me?
There's no signature. The bills are to be small denomination, unmarked, and wrapped in newspaper. Also, it says, keep the police out. Mrs. Trenton, this is serious.
Who'd want to threaten me? Here, let me see that note. Well, why $30,000? Why not $50,000 or $100,000?
It does seem a strange amount.
There may be something to this after all. Jason, get Judge Boyle on the phone. Tell him to get over here right away. Who is it?
Jason, ma'am. Judge Boyle is here.
Good. Come in.
Hello, Kate.
Who's that with you, Daniel? This is a private matter.
Extortion, Catherine, is not a private matter. It's a matter for the FBI. Now, as soon as Jason called me, I got in touch with Ben here, picked him up at the federal building. Mrs. Trenton, Inspector Brokaw.
How do you do, Mrs. Trenton?
You might be sorry you brought him, Daniel. For all I know, he might discover this is some scheme of yours.
My dear Catherine, you know I'd be lying if I said I couldn't use $30,000 to good advantage. But you also...
I know that as an executor of my estate, when I die, you'll milk it for every cent you can get.
Mrs. Trenton, if I may say so,
you
the judge...
You may not say so. This is no time for one of your rattle-brained opinions. Go back to your letter writing.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, Kate, you've never given anyone credit for having an honest thought. You know, you're so damn suspicious of everyone you've named your will that you failed to take this threat seriously.
Mrs. Trenton, if this is a genuine extortion threat, you have until tomorrow to save your neck. Now, Dan brought me here hoping that I could help you save it. May I see the letter in the envelope it came in?
Certainly, here.
Thank you.
Can you make out that postmark?
It's very faint. However, the zip code is legible. It was mailed locally. Well, the extortionist was smart enough to use a typewriter, but that doesn't exactly make him a genius. Every typewriter leaves evidence as clearly as handwriting or fingerprints. Tell me, Mrs. Trenton, who occupies this house besides yourself?
Well, there are the servants, my nurse,
Charlotte Kaiser. My secretary, Jason Franklin, and Meredith.
Meredith?
Meredith Trenton, a niece.
How old is she?
27.
Do you support her?
She eats and sleeps here. I give her an allowance for her other expenses.
A generous one?
Not generous enough, I'm afraid. I've had to pay off her gambling debts from time to time.
Big ones? Mrs. Trenton?
I'll answer that. Some have been big, some small. The last one was a... Big...
Daniel, I...
After the big one, Kate swore she'd never bail her out again.
Interesting. Is she in town? I mean, is she available for questioning?
She can usually be reached somewhere.
What about boyfriends?
I gave up trying to keep track of them years ago.
She's a bit of a swinger, Ben.
Oh? And your nurse, how long has she been with you?
About 3 years.
Mm-hmm. How about the servants?
Well, there's two. There's a houseboy and a maid. They've been with me since my late husband hired them some 30 years ago.
How about Joseph? He might warrant some checking into.
Joseph?
Joseph Paxton, Mrs. Trenton's chauffeur.
Well, why do you suspect him?
Oh, I didn't say I suspected him. It's just that I know he hits the bottle a little too often, disappears occasionally for 2 or 3 days.
He'll be gone longer than 2 or 3 days this time. I fired him yesterday.
Drinking?
The worst ever. Most obnoxious. Threatened all kinds of trouble, even though I gave him a full month's severance pay.
Do you know where he lives?
I'm afraid not. He lived here until yesterday.
I'll tell you where you might get a lead, Ben. He has a cousin who owns a garage at the other end of town.
But at least it's a start. Well, I guess that's it for now, Mrs. Trenton. I'll have our laboratory man go over the envelope and the note.
Thank you for coming, Inspector.
You're welcome. Coming, Dan?
Oh, I'll be right with you. You're in good hands, Catherine. Ben Brokaw knows what he's doing every minute. Take care now.
Charlotte!
Charlotte! Oh, listen to her fizz. You know, she's been like that as long as I can remember.
Yeah, she must have built up a big backlog of resentment. Practically anyone we've discussed might have been goaded into extortion or anything else for revenge.
What's your next move, Ben?
Well, as soon as I get back to the office, I'll see if we can round up that chauffeur.
Aren't you glad?
Glad is what happens when you use Dial soap.
Aren't you glad?
It starts right out with a clean, fresh scent that's like nothing else.
Aren't you glad?
To get you going, clean and fresh.
Aren't you glad? Aren't you glad?
Washes away the cause of odor on your skin.
Aren't you glad?
You just can't buy a better deodorant soap than Dial.
Aren't you glad?
And that's saying something.
Aren't you glad? Aren't you glad? You use Dial. Aren't you glad? You use Dial. Aren't you glad? Aren't you glad? You use
Night.
Good evening, Miss Meredith.
What's good about it?
Here, let me take your coat and scarf. You're soaking wet.
Well, I'm glad you noticed.
I know you're upset, Miss Meredith. I'm sorry I had to call you and interrupt your plans.
I hope you didn't tell anyone where you located me.
Of course not.
Why the devil should I have to come all the way back here just because my bitch of an aunt got a crazy letter from somebody as spaced out as she is?
The FBI man wanted everybody here. He's been all over this house for the last hour or so. All of us except you have been fingerprinted. He asked that I send you into the library as soon as you arrive. His name is Inspector Brokaw. I'll take your things to the kitchen to dry. See you later.
Okay.
Come in.
Hello, Judge. Jason says they want my fingerprints.
It'll only take a moment. Now, just press your finger on this ink pad, please.
Now, why don't you ask me if I've robbed any safes lately?
I don't have to. If you had, you'd have paid off Nick.
What do you know about Nick?
I would just press your fingers on this card. Nick is a crooked gambler and a dangerous man, especially if someone owes him $30,000. Now, the left fingers, please.
Okay. So you know about Nick. But I didn't write that letter.
But you, along with a lot of other people, would benefit by your aunt's death. Here, wipe your fingers on this tissue.
Are you through with me?
For now.
Send Charlotte in, will you please?
Please, don't leave the house.
In this storm? You've got to be kidding.
Inspector Brokaw speaking.
Inspector, this is McDougal.
Oh, hi, Mac. What's with the chauffeur?
Nothing yet. I put out a 3-state alarm and an APB on him in case he's decided to split.
Okay, stay in touch. I'll be here for a while.
You wanted to see me?
Yes. This is a sheet of your stationery, isn't it, Miss Kaiser?
It's probably mine. Why?
The extortion letter was written on a sheet exactly like this.
And that makes me guilty?
No, I didn't say so.
If anybody around here wanted to get $30,000 from Mrs. Trenton, it probably would have been...
Oh, then you know about Meredith Trenton's gambling debt.
Jason told me.
Okay, that'll be all for now. Thank you.
I'll be in my room if you want me.
Oh! I'm sorry.
Well, as long as you're interested enough to eavesdrop, Mr. Franklin, you might as well come in.
Well, if I can be of help.
It's just possible. Do you recognize the typing on this sheet of paper?
I'm not sure. It seems to be the same style of type as that of the machine I use.
Well, it should be. I typed this on your machine. I have a hunch the microscope will show that the typing on the extortion note will match this perfectly.
Look, Inspector, I have no reason to extort money from Mrs. Trenton. I'm well paid, and she's told me she's been very generous to me in her will.
You know something, Dan?
What?
I'm beginning to think that whoever wrote this letter...
Oh, my goodness.
No!
Mr. Trenton, no! What's going on?
Oh, come on!
You're probably well aware of the advantages of a well-tuned car in helping you obtain better gas mileage. A well-tuned car can run more efficiently, more economically. If all cars were properly tuned and operating efficiently, we could save millions of gallons of gas. To help you evaluate your car's efficiency, your participating GM dealer has two new energy checks available. One is an economy checkup that includes an engine diagnosis along with several other inspections to see if your car is up to specs. The other is an economy tune-up to help give you a smooth running engine that performs efficiently. Making the most out of the gasoline around is one of our country's basic challenges. It's important to you and to us at General Motors. That's why we're inviting everyone to come in now for a GM energy check at a Chevrolet, Pontiac, Oldsmobile, Buick, or Cadillac dealer. Get together with him and get more of a run for your money.
Hello?
Oh, Monica.
So soon? They're having a party again.
Dinner. Friday?
No.
Well, it certainly sounds like fun.
Fun. He gets everybody drunk on martinis. They forget to serve dinner, and everybody gets a hangover. Well, great.
We should come early for a couple of extra silver bullets. Oh, yes. I suppose that was funny the last time. I mean, the way the Claypools conked out.
Silver bullets? Who needs it?
Well, look, I better check with Roger. Roger, what should I tell him?
Look, honey, we don't want to go there. Tell her we're busy. Tell her we're on the wagon.
Just tell her no.
Let's face it. People who need to drink that much to be social are not really social drinkers. For a free booklet about drinking, write Alcohol, Box 2345, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
A public service message from this station and the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism.
Yeah, it's been a long couple of hours. How has she been?
Now, the doctor just left. He told me she's suffering more from shock than anything. Although there's some serious bleeding and severe powder burns. The pistol was obviously fired at such an angle that it caused only a scalp wound. It's touch and go, but apparently she'll live. You know, as your friend, Dan, I hate to say it, but this does delay certain benefits which you and the other...
Lord, Dan, I didn't mean it that way.
Judge Boyle means that Mrs. Tretton, though spared now, will have to face an excruciatingly painful death later on.
Yeah, well, she told me she has bone cancer. Tell me, Dan, have you ever seen this gun before?
My God. Was that the pistol she... Her own gun?
Yeah, it was found on the floor behind her bed.
I didn't know she had a gun.
Now, the nurse didn't know it either. As it turns out, Dan, this is your gun.
Well, you don't think I... Well, she wanted a gun for protection, so I bought that for her 3 weeks ago. Well, I never dreamed she'd use it.
Well, I'm afraid she not only used the gun, I suspect she used you.
Meaning?
Damned if I know, Dan. Right now, my gut's trying to tell me something, but my brain doesn't dig it. Well, I know it's terribly late at night for this, but the reason I've called you all together again is that I think we're just about ready to wind up this case. Our lab has gone over what evidence I've uncovered very thoroughly. For example, Jason, the extortion note was typed on your machine.
Oh?
And your fingerprints are on the letter.
Naturally. I handled it to open it and to read it to Mrs. Tretton.
And Nurse Kaiser, your prints were not found on the note, but there were traces of fuzz from lavender suede gloves.
I don't even own a pair of gloves, any color.
And Mrs. Tretton was shot with a gun registered to Judge Boyle, but his fingerprints weren't on it. And in running a check on Miss Meredith's gambling friend, Nick, we learned that she's in hock to him for exactly
$30,000. $30,000. Excuse me, Inspector, but the APB got your man, Joseph Paxton.
Oh, thank you, officer. Ladies and gentlemen, I must speak with him privately. Kindly wait in this room till I return. I think we have this just about cleared up.
Did Joseph have anything to do with it?
No, but he was quite helpful. You see, Mrs. Tretton failed to tell me something. Now, when she gave Joseph his month's severance pay, she also gave him a sizable sum as a fee for mailing a letter for her. A letter addressed to herself.
I don't understand.
That's right. She wore lavender suede gloves, which incidentally I just located in her room. The letter was posted downtown. She wanted the $30,000 for your gambling debt, Miss Meredith.
Oh, no.
Without having the executors of her will know about it. She thought that by committing suicide using the gun that was registered to Judge Boyle, she'd escape her ultimate painful death and place the suspicion of murder on all the beneficiaries of the will. She hated all of you, you know.
Maltrus! Carry on! Yes, I did it! And the only regret I have is it didn't work. And when I do die, I hope my money takes you all to hell.
Oh, Mrs. Tretton. Mrs. Tretton.
Give your hand to a friend. Give your heart to your love, to your love. But give your allergy to contact.
Allergy is our business, too. We know pollen. And we know that any of the 12,000 quarts of air you breathe each day may contain enough pollen to make your eyes itch, make you sneeze, and drip. We also know an ingredient that helps block pollen's bad effects. It's the antihistamine most prescribed by allergy specialists. It's an ingredient in contact.
Give your hand to a friend. Give your heart to your love, to your love.
The tiny time pills in one contact keep this antihistamine working up to 12 full hours, all day, all night.
Give your allergy to contact.
Make contact only when needed, only as directed.
I'm Rod Serling. Close your eyes, exercise your imagination, and join us again on our next presentation of The Zero Hour.
El Pomé was heard as Inspector Brooklyn. Featured in the cast were Peggy Weber, Lou Krugman, Julie Bennett, and Mark Kelly. Zero Hour, created by J.M. Brooks, directed by Don Hill, and produced in Hollywood. Mutual broadcasting system by Radio Productions Incorporated. Music composed and conducted by Stanley B. Hoffman. Rochelle Sherman, associate producer. This has been a presentation of the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Well, as you can tell by looking at the clock, we have a little extra time because the later, newer radio shows were only about 20 minutes or so. They didn't go the full 30 minutes or 60 minutes. So we have about 15 minutes left, and we're going to play an episode of Imagine That.
Russian immigrant rides continuously for 2 days on streetcars.
Two kings bet on a wrestling match.
A ballad retracted from intended obscurity makes an operetta internationally famous.
Can you imagine that? These completely true facts and others, ladies and gentlemen, are going to be paraded before you in just a few minutes by your narrator, Lindsay McCarry, and his co-workers on this session of this broadcast series. We'll return in just a minute and a half with the first one. Number one on our parade of amazing facts and news stories. In these days, the bewildered traveler the world over receives every possible assistance in his journeys from many kinds of agencies. Not so with Rosie Kamenetsky, however. It was on the last day of November in the year 1909 that Rosie, a recent arrival from Russia just 3 weeks previously, left the home of friends on 3rd Avenue in Brooklyn to return to the home of Mrs. Mary Uhlman on 59th Street, where she was employed. But Rosie didn't return. Mrs. Uhlman waited patiently and then anxiously, but Rosie was apparently swallowed in the maw of metropolitan civilization. Rosie failed to return to the Uhlman home for 2 days. Then, a fellow countrywoman, Mrs. Mary Lipitska, discovered Rosie Kamenetsky on a streetcar, and the thoroughly frightened young Russian girl was able at last to make herself understood. Up to that time, knowing virtually no English, unable to convince anyone of her plight, poor Rosie had been riding around Brooklyn on streetcars for 46 hours. Can you imagine that? You know, some of our customs of today have their origins so far back in time and antiquity that it's pretty hard to trace them. But I think that here's one you'll enjoy hearing about because so many of you might have experienced it. It's the origin of the bridal shower. You see, quite some time ago, a young Dutch girl, we'll call her Katje because her real name doesn't matter, fell in love with a poor young Dutch miller whom we'll call Jan. And one day, Katje had a talk with her father, who said,
"No, no, no, you'll not marry Jan Vanderboom.
I love him."
"Love? Bah! Katje, either you marry the young Kershannon, or you'll not get one guilder for a dowry. Tell young Vanderboom that, and see how he'll like marrying a girl who'll have no dowry. I guess you'll soon change your tune when you see his face fall."
But father was wrong, for Jan really loved Katje, not the dowry. So Katje and Jan were married, and true to his word, the father gave no dowry. Soon after, the penniless young couple were seated in their bare little house, talking it over.
"Oh, Jan, I'm so sorry. You had hardly enough for yourself, much less for two of us."
"No, you're much too pretty to worry your head about that. Why, soon the crops will be in it. Someone at the door."
"Father."
"You stay here. If he's come to gloat over us, I'll..." "Now, look here." "Oh."
"Well, Jan, does an old woman have to wait for hours before you'll open the door and let me see the pretty bride?"
"Why, no, Frau Baumer. Katje, it's Frau Baumer."
"Why the tears spoiling that pretty little face?"
"Oh, Frau Baumer,
Yes, yes, I have eyes. No kettles, no dishes, no curtains.
Oh, Obama, please.
Now, Jan, you didn't think I came here to poke fun, did you? Open the door. Open it. Don't stand there gaping. Open it.
What?
Jan. All your friends. We don't forget the miller who ground our grain and gave us bread and flour when we needed it. And from each, a little gift. See? A kettle of copper.
Kachi.
Jan. Pottery, everything a young couple needs.
Oh,
And so Katya and Jan were started off with gifts that represented no great outlay of money, but gifts that meant much because they were necessary articles around the house. Well, the idea soon took popular hold, and now all over the world we have bridal showers thanks to a little Dutch girl and her husband. Can you imagine that? Well, now let's see what pops out of the bag next. In these days, when the gentle sex is invading all forms of business activity, we're pretty apt to sigh and say, well, woman's place is no longer in the home. Why, they're even letting the ladies steal some of the laurels in sports. There are girl baseball teams, girl basketball squads, lady high jumpers, long-distance runners, automobile racers, and whatnot. You may say, of course, well, there's one sport that women can't take away from us men, prize fighting. Uh-huh, but you're wrong there, you mass of muscle and sinew. Yep, as far back as 1722, get that, 1722, more than 200 years ago, this advertisement appeared in a London newspaper.
Challenge. Hi, Elizabeth Wilkinson of Clerkenwell. Having had some words with Anna Eyfield and requiring satisfaction, do invite her to meet me upon the stage and to box for 3 guineas, each woman holding half a crown in each hand, and the first woman that drops the money to lose the battle.
A few days later, this answer appeared.
I, Anna Eyfield, of Newgate Market, heiress of the resolution of Elizabeth Wilkinson, will not fail to give her more blows than words. I ask for my no fiver, and she may expect a good thumping.
And there you are, men. What are you going to do about a situation like that? Well, the men of that day did something about it because when the London bobbies read the 2 ads, they promptly notified the contestants that if they attempted to so defy the accepted rules of decency, they'd both land in Old Bailey, and the fight never came off. But you will admit Elizabeth and Hannah made a good stab at trying to be the first lady prize fighters. Closely allied in the public mind with boxing, of course, is the sport of wrestling. Here's an historic incident, absolutely true, in which, well, first let me remind you that today we call champions in various sports kings of their particular field. We call the heavyweight wrestling champion the king of the heavies. But never was the title king more appropriately applied than in the days of Henry VIII of England and Francis I of France. It seems that a team of wrestlers from Henry's court were meeting those from the court of Francis I. The arena, we may well imagine, was packed, for the presence of the two monarchs made it a gala occasion. The French wrestlers weren't doing any too well, and in the royal box where sat big, husky Henry VIII and smaller, vindictive, acid-tempered Francis I...
A wager, King Francis?
Eh?
I said, will you wager on this bout, or don't you have faith in your wrestlers?
Of course I have. Of course I have. 100 louis that my wrestler beats yours.
Done. Your men haven't won a bout all afternoon. That 100 louis will line my purse.
You think so, eh? Judon.
Yes, sire.
Order Beauvon to take the ring.
Yes, your majesty.
And Judon.
Sire?
Tell him this time to handle his great hulking body with more skill, or I stand to lose 100 louis. And he stands to lose his hide.
It shall be done, sir.
Beauvoir, an ox both in clumsiness and brains. Is he the best you have in France?
Better than those pigs you have.
200 more louis that my pig beats your ox.
Done.
They're entering the ring now. Watch.
Beauvoir! Beauvoir! Either you throw the Englishman or I'll flay you alive.
A nice reward. John the Butcher will kill your men. See? They come to grips. Throw him, butcher! Throw him!
Ox! Fool! Buffon! His neck! His neck! Wrap his neck, you idiot!
How can he grab a man's neck when his hands are pinned to his sides? Oh! Well done, butcher! Well done! Is done, Francis.
The fool! The idiots! Suckling noses!
Oh, Englishmen are better than Frenchmen, Francis.
Oh, you think so, eh? You think so? Then guard yourself.
What?
You! Oh. The kings are wrestling.
I strangled you. blow you.
You little worm, I'll squeeze the breath of life from you.
Oh, mon Dieu, it is war. Separate them. Get them apart. Oh, mon Dieu, mon Dieu.
And Francis I of France and Henry VIII of England had a royal match right then and there, truly kings of their divisions. Can you imagine that? Well, I wonder how many of you remember, or at least have heard, of that noted operatic company of the early 90s, which was known as the Bostonians. That company was responsible for the introduction of one of the world's most permanent ballads, but most inadvertently. It was on the occasion of the premiere performance of Robin Hood in Chicago on June 9th, 1890, that the two young writers, Harry B. Smith, the librettist, and Reginald de Koven, the composer, rushed elatedly backstage, receiving the plaudits of the members of the company, of the stagehands, musicians, friends. At last, they met the young singer who was portraying the role of Alan Adale, Jesse Bartlett Davis.
Hello, Mr. Smith. Mr. de Koven.
Oh, congratulations, Miss Davis. You were most charming.
Hmm.
Why, what's the matter, Jesse? You don't sound very enthusiastic.
Come into my dressing room a moment, gentlemen. I have something to say to you.
Of course.
Why, yes, sir. Why, yes.
Take chairs, gentlemen. This may take a little time.
Now then, Jesse, what's the trouble?
The trouble is with that song you've given me to sing in the second act.
The number to Annabelle, you mean?
Yes, and I don't like it.
Don't like it? Why, you're fooling, Jesse. Oh, didn't you hear the applause you got tonight?
That doesn't mean a thing to me. I'm not going to sing it again.
What did you say?
I'm not going to sing that song again. You'll have to write me another.
Oh, but we can't
write another
we
before tomorrow.
Nothing
all
you
right
can say will change my mind, gentlemen. I just refuse to sing that song once more.
Well, Miss Davis remained adamant, and the two writers left the theater that night, heartsick over what they believed to be unfounded temperament. At last, Reginald de Koven dug into his trunk and retrieved an almost forgotten ballad. He played it over for Jessie Davis. She liked it and agreed to sing it at the performance that night. As she stepped out upon the stage in her enticing costume as Alan Adale, a hush fell over the audience, and a pall of deep premonition of failure fell over de Koven and Smith. Then Miss Davis began to sing. Yes, it's true. The song which Reginald de Koven dug from possible oblivion and which later proved to be the hit number of Robin Hood was the never-to-be-forgotten Oh, Promise Me. Can you imagine that? Well, friends, it's time once more to close another session of these broadcasts, but we invite you to be listening for the next one over the same station soon. Until then, this is Lindsay McCary saying goodbye now.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.